बहुनाम जन्मनाम अन्ते ज्ञानवान् माम् प्रपद्यते वासुदेवः सर्वम् इति स महात्मा सुदुर्लभः बहुनाम् जन्मनाम् अन्ते ज्ञानवान् माम् प्रपद्यते वासुदेवः सर्वमिति स महात्मा सुदुर्लभः. ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. Knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is, such a great soul is very rare. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Kindly repeat. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is, such a great soul is very rare. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Swami Niti Namine. नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. So in the last two Wednesdays, we have been discussing the four kinds of people who come to Krishna and the four kinds of people who don't come to Krishna. So let us briefly revise what we have already discussed. So who are the four kinds of people who do not come to Krishna? Yes? Mudha. So who is the Mudha? The mentality of the ass. And what does he do? He works hard day and night, foaming at the mouth, simply for sense gratification, and he has no time for self-realization. What is the second category of people? What's the meaning of Naradhama? The lowest among mankind. And what is their particular characteristic? Well, all four of them don't believe in God. Yes? Yes, he appears to be very cultured, very polished, but actually because he has no spiritual culture, so although he is externally very materially advanced, but because of his lack of spiritual culture, he is actually amongst the most fallen of all mankind. What is the third category? Mayaya Pahrita Jnana. What is the meaning of that? Whose knowledge has been stolen by Maya, by illusion. And who is? What are the typical examples of Maya? Of course, not all scientists. There are many scientists who are devotees. Even in our congregation, there are many scientists. But scientists who are trying to negate the existence of God, who are trying to speculate mentally, philosophers, scientists of this sort, they are all considered to be in this category. What is the fourth category? What is the meaning of that? Those envious of the Lord, who deny his existence outright and want to challenge God on his face. These are the asuram bhavam ashritaha. So these are the four kinds of people who don't come to Krishna. And last time we discussed there were four kinds of people who come to Krishna. Who are those four kinds? Arthaha. Those who come because they have some distress. What is the second? Any example of that you remember? Second category of people who come to Krishna. Same order as in the verse. Jigyasu or inquisitive. He wants to know. He's curious to know what is going on. Like we have so many people who are passing by from this road and he heard the sound of some kirtan and he heard something on the microphone. And he thought, let's see what it's all about. After all, I'm free for an evening. Let me see. And they came in just to hear. And later on they went on to become devotees. But they came out of curiosity, inquisitiveness. Any examples of that? Kumaras. And third category? See, what is the meaning of that? Desires some material benefit. Who is desirous of something material. And he approaches God for fulfillment of that material desire. Any example? Maharaj. He wanted a kingdom greater than the kingdom of Brahma. He wanted a very large kingdom. Krishna fulfilled that. But ultimately, Dhruva Maharaj didn't want that. He became a pure devotee simply by actually rendering devotional service. Last category. Jnani. What is the meaning of Jnani? Who is searching for the absolute truth. He knows that he is searching for God. He may be an impersonalist, he may be a personalist, but all these come under the category of Jnani. Any example of Jnanis? Sages assembled at Naimisharanya when the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. So all those sages there, they were already seeking the absolute truth. So these are the four categories of people. Now the words Sukritina and Dushkritina are used. So what is the difference between these two? What is Dushkritina and what is Sukritina? Kritina means to perform certain activities. And Dushkritina means to perform sinful activities. Sukritina means one who is performing pious activities. Now we have already discussed some of these concepts in the earlier lessons. So let us review some of them. What is the meaning of being a pious person? And what is the meaning of being a sinful person? Obeying the law of God. How do we know what is the law of God? Where is it said? Who says it? Shastra or the scripture. In other words, a person who is living his life in violation of the laws of God, who is not living his life according to the injunctions of the scriptures, he is considered to be a sinful person. And a person who is living his life according to the injunctions of Shastra, he is following, doing his karma according to the scriptural injunctions, he is a pious man. So such pious people are called Sukritinas. So the typical characteristic of a Sukritana is that he avoids sinful activity. What are the four pillars of sinful activity? There are sinful activities, particularly in this age of Kali Yuga. What are they? Intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, meat eating. So those who are Sukritinas, they are free from these vices. They are situated in the mode of goodness. They are pious people. Sometimes, of course, it is very difficult to get pious people to become Krishna conscious. And it is sometimes easier to get very sinful people to become Krishna conscious. This is the paradox that we see. But in any case, Krishna is describing in that verse that these four kinds of people, they come to him sometimes. Right? And they are called Sukritina. So Sukritina means a person who is avoiding all the sinful activities and somehow or the other he comes to Krishna to render some devotional service because he has some motivation. Of course, he is not considered very intelligent. At the same time, Lord Krishna, he also says that such a person is very udara. Udara means magnanimous. Udara sarva evaite. He says all these four categories of people who come to me, they are very udara, very magnanimous. In other words, Lord Krishna is praising them. And on the other hand, we are always saying that such people are less intelligent. So is there a contradiction? Yes?
Lord Krishna says
such great souls in the very next verse. He says they udara, very magnanimous souls who come to me. And they are not so intelligent. They are magnanimous because at least they are coming to Krishna. The Dushkritinas, they never approach Krishna. They are atheistic. They never want to come near Krishna. But at least the Sukritinas, even if it is for some fulfillment of material desire, at least they go to Krishna. And therefore they have a chance that by going to Krishna, tomorrow they will get purified by rendering devotional service to Krishna. Although it is mixed devotional service. It is not pure devotional service. That devotional service has some material motive behind it. But nevertheless, by virtue of the fact that they are coming to Krishna and they are remaining with Krishna, there is a possibility that tomorrow they will become pure devotees when they come in contact with another pure devotee of the Lord. So therefore, because they are coming to Krishna, they are considered udaraha or magnanimous. But the Dushkritinas, they lose that chance. and therefore they remain for a long, long time in ignorance. So therefore these Sukritanas, somehow or the other they come. Now we see that there are some people who come, but when their desire is fulfilled, they go away. And they become happy. Now I've got my desire. I came to Krishna for some money. I asked him for money because I was in some distress. I got the money. Now I don't need Krishna. Now I'm living on my own abilities, on my own strength. So they go away. Then there is another kind class of Sukritana who come to Krishna for fulfillment of some material desires. And when it is not fulfilled, then they become very angry. Prabhupada used to quote the example very often of the Second World War. The German nation was fighting the British, and both were Christians. Of course, the denominations may have been different, but essentially both were Christians. So the mothers of all the young men who went to fight in the war, they were both praying to Christ, "You please save my son." And after all, in the war, someone has to die. So some mothers found that their sons had died. So they began to lose faith in God. What kind of God is this? I prayed to God to save my child and he didn't, so they became atheists. Again, do you remember the story of King Chitraketu and his son that we discussed a couple of months back? In that story we saw how King Chitraketu was begging for a son. And then when he got his son, of course Angira Muni had told him that your son, he will be Harshashoka, the cause of your joy and also the cause of your lamentation. But King Chitraketu had said, never mind, better a disobedient son than no son at all. So he had got his son. And in any case, to cut the long story short, the son died. And when the son died, naturally King Chitraketu, to the extent he was happy, he also became distressed when his son died. And he became unconscious. The queen also was in extreme misery. And when she saw her husband in so much misery, she became even more distressed. And then at that time, she began to curse the Lord. She became angry. She was praying to the Lord earlier, please give me a son, please give me a son. And when the son came, she was very happy. But when the son was lost, then she began cursing the Lord. What did she say? She said that you are very cruel and you are very inexpert. Actually, by the laws of creative power, the son should never die during the lifetime of the father. But therefore, you have violated your own laws and therefore you are very less intelligent. She's telling God, she's telling Krishna, that actually you are very inexpert. You don't know how to handle things. And if fruitive activity is so powerful, that it is even more powerful than birth and death, then what is the need for a God? That means karma itself is supreme. You see, there is a class of philosophers called Karma Mimamsa. Now these philosophers say that there is no need for a God. That karma is supreme and everything is determined only according to karma. They don't understand that there is a supreme personality who is underlying the laws of karma, who is handling, who is actually controlling the laws of karma. When we speak of a law, we also speak of a lawmaker. If you talk about the law of karma, there must be a person who has made these laws and who is ensuring that these laws are effective. Someone who is implementing the laws. Even on the road, when you see a simple road sign, no left turn or no entry, you understand there is some authority behind it. So when such a fantastic law, such a subtle law, which operates at such subtle levels of human activity, how can we expect that such a law will not have a lawmaker? So these Karma Mimamsa philosophers, they say that karma is supreme. If I perform a certain activity, I must get the result, and no power in this universe can stop me from getting this result if I have done that activity. But they don't understand that Krishna, if he likes, can interfere with anything at any time at his own sweet will. That is the meaning of God. But in any case, so they say like this. So this queen, in her misery, she was also speaking this Karma Mimamsa philosophy. She was saying that if fruitive activity is so powerful, then there is no need for God like you. And if you want to cut off the relations between father and child, mother and child in this way, then no one in future will want to become parents. Then they will neglect their parents, they will neglect their children. So in this way she began to curse. So there is also one problem with these devotees, these Sukritanas. They are pious, they come, but because of ignorance or not lack of complete knowledge, either they go away or when the desire is not fulfilled, they become very angry. But then those few fortunate Sukritanas who stay on, somehow or the other persevere in the devotional service of the Lord, in the contact of pure devotees, then somehow or the other, sooner or later, they will also become pure devotees. And then their life becomes perfect. So this is how gradually the Sukritanas get elevated in their consciousness. So therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, Akama sarva kamova moksha kama udardi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham paraha. That whether you have material desires, sarva kama, kama means material desires. Whether you are sarva kama, whether your mind and heart are full of material desires, or whether you are akama, you have no material desires, or whether you are moksha kama, whether you simply desire liberation from this material existence, whatever be your situation, whatever be your mentality, simply worship Krishna with great enthusiasm, with great intensity. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Bhakti yoga. Therefore worship Krishna with great intensity. This is the injunction of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should not think, oh, I have so many material desires in my heart, therefore I cannot approach Krishna. No. It is because we have material desires in our heart that we have to approach Krishna. And for a pure devotee also, because he doesn't have any material desires, he still approaches Krishna. In all conditions of life, we simply approach Krishna. That is the sum and substance of spiritual life. Just keep, remain at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So therefore we can see that even among the Sukritanas, even among those who are devotees of the Lord, there are two kinds of devotees. One are called the Sakama devotees. Sakama devotees are these Sukritanas described in the verse that we discussed earlier, the four kinds of Sukritanas. They are also called Sakama because they approach Krishna with some material desire. And there are those who are also called Akamaha. Akama means they come to Krishna without any material motive. They want to serve Krishna simply for the sake of serving Krishna, for no other motive. This is pure devotional service, pure bhakti. The great Acharya Rupa Goswami, in whose footsteps we are following, he declares, Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma dinavritam anukulena krishna anushilanam bhaktiruttama. He is defining what is pure bhakti here. He says pure bhakti means that which is anya abhilashita shunya. There must be no material desire at all in the heart. Jnana karma dinavritam. There must be no mixture of wanting to speculate mentally, or no mixture of wanting to get some material benefit in return. And it must be rendered favorably, anukulena. Anukula means very favorably rendered. Not rendered with some kind of regret, or not rendered angrily, or not rendered in envy. It must be favorably rendered, without any material motivation. So those great souls who render this kind of devotional service to the Lord, they are called akama bhaktas, or pure devotees of the Lord. And they are also called mahatmas. So the subject matter of today's verse is this Mahatma. So just to recapitulate so far in what we have discussed today, there are four kinds of people who don't come to Krishna. They are the Duskritinas. Four kinds of people who come to Krishna. They are the Sukritinas. Sukritinas are devotees. Duskritinas are non-devotees. The Sukritinas, although they are devotees, but they are not very elevated devotees. They are called mixed devotees, Sakama devotees. And when they get elevated by coming into contact with the pure devotees of the Lord, then they will eventually become Mahatmas. So the Mahatmas of the great souls is the highest category. And the Sukritanas are in the lower category. So in this way we see there are many types of worshippers of God. So this is the second category. In future classes we will discuss three other categories of worshippers of God. Now, altogether five classes of worshippers of God. Please remember this. Five classes of worshippers of God. One is the Sakama Bhaktas, the Sukritanas. We were discussing them last time, last Wednesday. Then second, the pure devotees, the Mahatmas, discussed today. And the next three categories of worshippers of God, we will discuss over the period of the next several weeks. So we can see that these Mahatmas are the great souls. Their only business in life is to serve God. They have no other work. The word Mahatma is not a rubber stamp that can be applied to any political personality or any great social reformer. The word Mahatma means great soul. not a great body, a great soul. In other words, his activity, his greatness lies in his activity in relation to the soul. There are many people who do great activity in relation to the body, but they may be called great bodies but not great souls. They cannot be called Mahatmas. So therefore, such Mahatmas have been described by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also. Can anyone narrate that shloka, chant that shloka in which Lord Krishna describes who is a Mahatma? Anyone knows that shloka? How do you define who is a Mahatma? Here also Lord Krishna describes, but there is another verse also. Yes? Very good. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakriti mashritaha bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadin avyayam. Lord Krishna says that the Mahatmas are those great souls who have completely surrendered to me. Daivim prakritim ashritaha. Among the Dushkritanas, you saw the last category of people were Asurim Bhavam Ashritaha. They've taken shelter of the demoniac or the atheistic sentiment. But these are Daivim Prakritim Ashritaha. They have also taken shelter. But shelter of what? They have taken shelter of the Lord, of His divine energy. So these people are called Mahatmas. And what is their activity? How do you know who is a Mahatma and who is not a Mahatma? Do we go around wearing a label or a designation that he is a Mahatma? On our door, do we have a designation board saying, like chairman, managing director, Mahatma? How do you understand who is a Mahatma? The definition Lord Krishna says in the very next line of that same shloka. He says, you must be completely engaged in his devotional service. You must be completely 100%, 100% engaged. Then only can you be called a Mahatma. Gyatva bhutadim avyayam. When you know that Lord Krishna is the supreme Lord of all, then you will do bhajanti ananya manaso. With one pointed mind, one pointed attention, you will continue to serve the supreme Lord. This is the characteristic of a Mahatma. So Mahatma means one who has surrendered to the Lord. Only he can know Krishna. Sometimes people say very casually, oh yes, I know God. But if you know God, are you surrendered to God? Then he says, yes, yes, I have surrendered to God. If you surrender to God, are you really serving God 24 hours a day? That is the meaning of serving God. That's the meaning of being surrendered to God. And only a surrendered soul can be a Mahatma. Therefore, Lord Krishna describes here that a person becomes a Mahatma when he surrenders completely to the Lord. Jnanavan mam prapadyate. Prapadyate means to surrender. So when someone surrenders to Krishna utterly, he is called a Mahatma. And such a soul, a great soul, some Mahatma, is very rare. Sudurlabha. Very, very rare to find such a soul. You don't find Mahatmas walking around in the street or in the bus. Very rare to find them. One among many, many thousands, first of all, even endeavors for spiritual life, Lord Krishna says. So, out of those thousands, hardly one reaches perfection. So, Mahatmas are very few, very, very rare. So, Lord Krishna says that such a position is attained after many lives. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate. Now, you may say, why does it take many lives? Why not 1 second? Perfect. Why not? Indeed. That question we should ask ourselves. Why am I not surrendering to Krishna? What is the problem? The problem is, I don't have that faith. I don't have that conviction that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. I don't have the conviction that I am actually not the Lord of this whole creation. I don't have the conviction that this material world is actually not meant for my enjoyment, but it is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. I still believe that I can be happy in this world without Krishna. So because I don't have the proper faith, therefore I am not able to surrender to Krishna. Because I have faith in so many other things also. In my abilities, in my strength, in this and that, so many other things. So if one really wants to surrender, one can surrender immediately, right now. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the narration of a king called King Khatvang. He was fighting on behalf of the demigods. Whenever the devatas were in trouble, they would call this King Khatvang. He was actually an ancestor of Lord Ramachandra. He appeared in the same dynasty before Lord Ramachandra. So he was a great king. And because the demigods were so happy with him at the end of the battle, they asked him, you ask us for any benediction, we will give you. And then he said, well, tell me how long I have to live. And they said, you have only one moment to live. So what did he do? In that one moment, he took complete shelter of the Lord, became a pure devotee. On the other hand, all of us, at least I have probably been going through many lives, bahunam janmanam ante. After many lives, still sometimes we don't surrender. We know Krishna is the Supreme Lord. We know intellectually, but still we don't want to surrender. So it's all a matter of our individual choice. The intelligent person wants to surrender immediately. To the extent we are not intelligent, we want to still hang on in our material life. So therefore, the process takes a short while or a long while, depending on how sincere we are to make our life perfect. So in this way we can see it's a very rare thing. It takes a very long time. And after having surrendered to Krishna, then such a person becomes completely pure. And then he is no more a Sakama Bhakta. Till such time as there is even an ounce of material desire in our heart, we are said to be Sakama. When that last trace of material desire is washed away from the heart, then we can be called pure devotees of the Lord. So what is the difference between Sakama and Akama Bhaktas? Or the two categories of worshippers that we have discussed now? Yes? Number one, anyone? In the Sakama Bhakta, there is material desire, and in the Akama Bhakta, no material desires. But there is also one extra difference, which follows from the first. When the Sakama Bhaktas are in danger, or they are in some difficulty, what do? No, they run to the Lord. Sometimes they forget God, but sometimes, like the demigods, they are also Sakama Bhaktas. There are some devatas or demigods who are actually pure devotees, like Yamaraj, for example. But there are others who are not so pure devotees, like Indra. Sometimes Indra, you know, he has so many material desires. So the demigods, they are Sakama Bhaktas. So whenever they are in some difficulty, when the asuras are harassing them a lot, then they run to Krishna. They run to Lord Vishnu immediately for relief. So the demigods are intelligent. They know where to run in times of trouble. But when we are in trouble, what do? Doctor, lawyer, police, army, navy, so many things. We don't run to Krishna. Sakama Bhaktas, they're intelligent. But in times of difficulty, they go to Krishna. Please help me. But the Akama Bhaktas, the pure devotees of the Lord, even in times of great difficulty, they do not approach Krishna. Why? Now you may say, the asuras, the demoniac people, they also don't approach Krishna when they are in difficulty. And the pure devotees also don't approach Krishna when they are in difficulty. But what's the difference? Yes? But then, why should they not, if they have faith, why don't they approach Krishna? Why don't they go to Krishna, the pure devotees? They don't have any material desires and they are not worried at all. They say, Krishna, whatever is happening is perfect. Krishna is looking after me anyway. Why do I need to worry? If Krishna has put me in this difficulty, he will put me out of it. And if he is not pulling me out of it, that means he wants me to be in it. If he wants me to be in it, who am I to object? Might as well be here and make Krishna happy. So he is here in this situation. Whereas the Sakama Bhakta is always worried. Why Krishna has put me in this position? Let me go to Krishna. Let him solve this problem of mine. So in this way, the Sakama Bhaktas is always running. The asuras, they don't go to Krishna because they have no faith at all. So they don't even recognize the existence of Krishna. They don't recognize his power. The pure devotees, out of love, they don't want to disturb Krishna. Why should I go and disturb Krishna unnecessarily just for an insignificant soul like me? Who, because I can't control my mind and senses, and because I cannot understand, I cannot surrender to Krishna, so why should I go and trouble Krishna? Of course, from Krishna's point of view, he is never troubled. Krishna wants to reach out to his devotees. But the devotee out of love doesn't want to trouble Krishna. That is bhakti. That is a sentiment of devotion. Like Sudama. Although his wife was also a great devotee. But she was telling Sudama, at least for your own sake, look, you have become so thin. At least go and beg Krishna for some food. We discussed the story of Sudama some Wednesdays back. And Sudama was thinking, why should I trouble Krishna for such a small thing, for just food for us? Anyway, he's giving us, why should I go there? In any case, just to please his wife, he went. But even when he went, all the time he was thinking, I will never ask Krishna for anything. And even when he sat there, he never asked. He came back without asking Krishna. But Krishna gave him everything. Correct? So Sudama had that mentality like a devotee. He didn't want to trouble Krishna to ask him, give me my daily bread. So therefore, this is the mentality of a pure devotee. just like so many other great devotees. Brahma in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a very wonderful prayer, shloka by Lord Brahma in this connection, and it goes something like this.
Tatte nukampam susamikshamano bhunjan evatma kritam vipakam ridvagvapurvi vidadhan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya bhak.
In this shloka, Lord Brahma explains that all the difficulties that I'm experiencing, my Lord, they are only your mercy. Anukampa. Tate anukampa. I will wait for your mercy. I recognize this as your mercy. And whatever is happening to me now, I understand that they are the results of my past karma. And therefore I should simply tolerate. I should simply bear with it. Bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam. It is my activities. I have committed sinful activities in the past and I am getting those reactions now. So why should I trouble you? Because I committed some sins in the past. For my fault, why should I trouble you? Therefore I will tolerate bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam. And therefore, quietly tolerating my the reactions of my sinful acts of the past, I will, what will I do? Will I sit quietly? No. Ridvag vapurbhir vidadhan namaste. With my heart, with my speech and with my body, I will continue to offer obeisances to you again and again, and I will expect and wait for your mercy to come. Anukampa susamikshamano. I know one day you will give me your mercy, but I am patient. I will wait. This is another quality of the devotee. His surrender means willingness to wait. It is most difficult to wait. We want everything immediately. So patience is a symptom of surrender. We want to become pure devotees overnight. I've been chanting for 1 month. Why my hairs are not standing on end? Why the tears are not flowing from my eyes? Why my body is not trembling in ecstatic trance? Why Krishna is not appearing in front of me? But it's patience. We need patience. It will come if we simply follow. In the meanwhile, if we get some difficulty in the way, we are so troubled. Why are all the difficulties coming upon me only after I become a devotee? Before I was a devotee, everything was going nice. Of course, that is also another illusion. Nothing is ever going nice in this material world. But still we tend to think that the grass is greener on the other side. Oh, those days were good. Actually, no days were ever good. But we think like that. The days in the past and the days in the future, we think they are good. But the present day, oh, it's so horrible. So in this material world, everything is horrible without Krishna. So therefore we should know that whatever is happening to us also is by the grace of Krishna. We should simply tolerate. And therefore wait for Krishna's mercy. And what is the last line of the shloka? Jiveta yo mukti padesa daya bhag. And therefore Lord Brahma says, such a person who lives like this, with this consciousness, what does he become? He becomes a rightful claimant to liberation from this material miseries, from this material existence. Daya bhag. The word daya bhag means it is his right. He becomes a rightful claimant. He can demand, yes, now I can be liberated from this material existence. So if we simply tolerate like this and accept everything and continue to discharge devotional service, there are other people who say, well, it is also my past reaction, what can I do? And then they engage in all kinds of activity of self-pity. Oh, I'm so fallen. And then they leave devotional service. And they go away from Krishna consciousness. Oh, what can I do? I am so fallen. I am like this, I am like that. I don't have any ability to perform devotional service. But no, Lord Brahma doesn't say that. Lord Brahma says you should consider yourself most fallen. You should consider yourself, all the misery is happening as a result of your past sinful activity. But you should go on with your devotional service. You should not stop it. Ridvagvapurbhir vidadhan namaste. That must not stop. We can see also in the lives of the great souls, the Mahatmas, how they actually demonstrated these qualities. There was a very great saintly personality called Haridas Thakur. Because we are dealing with Lord Brahma's quotation from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is interesting that Haridas Thakur was the incarnation of Brahma himself. He, as you all know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Lord Krishna himself, who appeared on this planet 500 years ago in Navadvip, Bengal. And he manifested so many wonderful pastimes here on this planet. And he inaugurated the Yuga Dharma for this age, Harinam Sankirtan. The Harinam Sankirtan is the only way in this age of getting uplifted from this material miseries and to achieve pure love of God. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is considered the most merciful incarnation of the Lord, because he is giving to us what no other incarnation has ever given, pure love of God. And he is distributing it very, very freely without any consideration of one's qualification or one's abilities. He is just giving to one and all freely. So one of Lord Chaitanya's very close associates was Haridas Thakur. Actually, in material terms, Haridas Thakur was senior to Lord Chaitanya. Haridas Thakur was much older than Lord Chaitanya. And he appeared in a Muslim family actually. And because he was chanting the name of Lord Krishna, of Lord Hari, so much and with such great devotion, Lord Chaitanya called him the Nam Acharya, the Acharya of the Holy Name. Haridas Thakur would chant almost 21 to 22 hours every day. Not in 1 week, but every day. He would chant 21 to 22 hours, non-stop, no breaks in the middle. And he would not even take a sip of water or a morsel of prasad to eat till he had finished his chanting. Then he would do, in the balance 2 or 3 hours, he would do all his other activities. Eating, sleeping, bathing, everything else in the balance 3 hours. And 22 hours for chanting the holy name. Such was his devotion. Such was his exalted status. And he came from a Muslim family. Such an exalted position. It's unbelievable, unthinkable in this world. Of course, we cannot try to imitate Haridas Thakur. So in any case, Haridas Thakur, because he was a Muslim, born in a Muslim family, and he was chanting this Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So both the Hindus and the Muslims were very upset. The Muslims were upset because they said, this person is an infidel. He is born a Muslim and he is chanting the Hindu names of God. Therefore, he deserves to be ostracized. He should be killed. And the Nawab of that time, he became incensed with fury. He said, this man is a disgrace to our community. He is a threat to the Islamic community. Therefore, we should finish him. And the Hindus, on the other hand, were thinking, who is this Leksha, who is this Yavana coming and chanting the names of Krishna, and he's completely polluting the whole atmosphere. So the Hindus were against him, the Muslims were against him, everyone was against him. But Haridas Thakur was least perturbed. For one who is engaged 24 hours in the devotional service of the Lord, all these external disturbances and the honor and dishonor given by people are of no consequence to such a person. Tatha man apamana yoho, beyond man, apaman easily is concerned. He's transcendental to all of them. So in any case, the Nawab, he tried to kill him. He first tried to threaten him in many ways. And when Haridas Thakur wouldn't listen, then he eventually threatened to kill him. He had him brought there. And he said, we will let you go on one condition, that you must start chanting the name of Krishna. Otherwise we will kill you. So Haridas Thakur told the Nawab, under no condition will I stop chanting the name of Krishna. You may kill me. What you speak of killing me, you may cut my body into small pieces, this small. But each of those little pieces of my body will chant the name of Krishna. So what can you do? You can only cut up my body. But even those little pieces of flesh will chant the name of Krishna. In any case, you cannot kill me because I am the soul. So hearing this kind of talk, the Nawab was completely bewildered. Saying, how can anyone be like this? It was a puzzle, a great mystery. The great devotees of the Lord are very often misunderstood. And their greatness is also not understood. So then ultimately it was decided that he would be flogged to death. He would be whipped to death. And then he was whipped in 22 marketplaces, one after the other. In one marketplace he was whipped and whipped and whipped and taken to the next and so on. Now usually what used to happen, very hefty, the soldiers would come and whip. So, and no person would last more than a few whips, and then he would die out of sheer pain and exhaustion. But the soldiers who were whipping Haridas Thakur, they were amazed and astonished that they whipped and whipped and whipped, not only in one marketplace, second, third, but went on to do it in 22 marketplaces. And Haridas Thakur didn't show any sign of pain. He didn't show any sign of repentance. He didn't show any sign of begging for forgiveness. On the contrary, he was blissfully continuing to chant the name of Krishna all the time. And in fact, after some beatings, these soldiers were getting tired. They were beating with all their might and they were getting tired. And then finally, they pleaded with him, "You please die. Otherwise we will be in trouble because our heads will be chopped off. The Nawab is waiting. He wants us to give the result. And if we do not give him the news that you have died, then we will have to die." So see the quality of the great devotee, the Mahatma, like Haridas Thakur. What did he say? Did he say, "Well, you are trying to kill me. Better you die. So you die. I will not die." What did he say? He said, "Okay, because of my living, of my being alive, if it is causing you so much distress, if it is going to be the cause of your death, then better I die." So what did he do? He said, "Release me for some time." He sat down, cross-legged, and he went into deep samadhi. And in that samadhi, all his life symptoms stopped. And when his life symptoms stopped, he appeared just like a dead body. No response, no breathing, nothing. Just like the yogis. Sometimes they sit under the ground for months together, for years together. Prabhupada used to say there were some yogis who can suspend their bodily functions for years together. And they excavate them after many years, and then the yogi starts his breathing process all over again. All the metabolic activities in the body are completely stopped. Even the doctors declare him clinically dead. But after several years he comes back to life. So the great devotees of the Lord, although they are not interested in these kind of powers, but nevertheless the pure devotee, by the grace of Krishna, sometimes can get all these powers and do it at will. So Haridas Thakur went into a deep state of samadhi, constantly thinking of Krishna within himself, and therefore he suspended all his bodily functions. So everyone thought that he had died. And with great jubilation the soldiers went on to proclaim to the Nawab that Haridas Thakur has died. And everyone, all the Nawab and his followers, very happy. So they said, "Now just how? What can we do? Do you burn him or do you cremate him? What do you do? Is he a Hindu or is he a Muslim?" So he said, "Easiest way out, just dump him into the river." So they threw him into the Ganges. And they threw him in the Ganges and he began to float down the river. And then he came back to consciousness, to external consciousness. Haridas Thakur. And then he came and he came back to the nearing village, near the banks of the river, and he began his preaching once again, as if nothing had happened. And when Nawab heard of this, he was struck with wonder, astonished completely. Who is this Haridas Thakur? What kind of man is this? And then actually he realized what is the greatness of Haridas Thakur. So the point of narrating this story here today is to see what is the meaning of a Mahatma. What is the meaning of complete surrender? That he never leaves the service of Krishna under any conditions. He never stops chanting the holy name under any conditions. Srila Prabhupada has taught us to chant. That's a great austerity. How much trouble. Every day in the morning, oh, I have to finish so many rounds. And then maybe somehow or the other, if I've not been able to do in the morning and I've come late in the night, oh, I've got 8 rounds left. Somehow it's the big burden on our shoulders. And if we are sick, oh, it's the only best excuse possible. Beads are on one side. We keep them aside and we forget them. And then we think, oh yes, I've got a valid excuse. Krishna will surely excuse me this time. After all, how much pain I have got in my stomach, I'm sure he understands. Or so much work today, I'm sure he will excuse me today. So we give up our devotional service. But pure devotional service means ahaituki apratihita. Not only without any material motivation as we discussed earlier, but also apratihita, which means without any interruption. There are no kinds of vacations or holidays from bhakti. No bank holidays and no strikes and no hartals and dharnas. Every day is a wonderful day for Krishna consciousness. So Haridas Thakur, even when he was being whipped and whipped, what happened? He never stopped chanting the name of Krishna. With the same degree of enthusiasm, he was continuing to chant Krishna's name. That is the glorification. And actually Lord Chaitanya later on revealed that he accepted all the blows on Haridas Thakur's back on his own shoulder. Because Krishna says, "I protect my devotee." Krishna could have easily killed. But Lord Chaitanya could have easily killed. But he didn't. Because that was not his role at that time. Because Haridas Thakur pleaded, "No, please, do not do it." So therefore Lord Chaitanya personally bore the blows of those whips on his own back. This is the glory of Lord Chaitanya, who is Lord Krishna himself. So just see, for a person who is a Mahatma, who has surrendered his everything, how much Lord Krishna or Lord Chaitanya is willing to give back. This has been the theme of our discussion in the last several Wednesdays also, correct? The theme of reciprocation between the devotee, which is really how bhakti becomes so glorious. The Lord reciprocates in equal measure. In fact, He reciprocates even more than what the devotee can give Him. So in this way we see the glories of a great Mahatma like Haridas Thakur. Also Jesus Christ. When Jesus Christ was being nailed to the cross, what was He saying? Was He condemning His people? Saying, you are all foolish people, you don't know, actually you are wrong, you made a mistake, it's not me, it's Him, we did it, why didn't you nail Him? Did He do that? Even we are accused of a small thing that we have done, then we become very defensive and we try to justify ourselves in so many different ways. Actually, I did like this and I did because of this and because of that, you don't understand me. And if someone accuses us of something we haven't done, then we raise hell. So it's, what about Jesus Christ? He just tolerated. What did He say at the time when He was on the cross? Forgive them, for they do not know what they do. These are the qualities of the Mahatma. Prabhupada used to also say that Jesus Christ is the great soul. He is also a Mahatma. In this Prahlad, when Prahlad was being also tortured in so many ways by his father Hiranyakashipu, he did not even pray to the Lord for protection. Because he knew if Krishna wants to protect, He will protect. Rakhe Krishna mare ke, mare Krishna rakhe ke. So he was not bothered. He was not concerned. He was simply thinking of Krishna all the time. So therefore, a Mahatma has to have these qualities. And this situation is obtained only after, generally speaking, after many, many, many births. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavan. So of the four kinds of Sukritinas, Artho, Artharthi, Jigyasu and Jnani, the Jnani is considered the best of them all by Lord Krishna in the very next verse. And He says, such a person who is actually in full knowledge of Me and who renders devotional service to Me in this consciousness, in full knowledge of Me, is very dear to Me. And such a person, very quickly, he will become elevated to the stage of pure devotion, of pure bhakti. Anyabhilashita shunyam, without any material desire. And then he will also become a Mahatma. So our goal is also to become Mahatma. Not so that people may call us Mahatma, but so that we can acquire the qualities of a Mahatma. So that we may learn to perfect our life by following the footsteps of such great Mahatmas. And then, what is the destination of such Mahatmas? At the end of this life, they are guaranteed to go back to Godhead. To go back to the kingdom of God from where we have come. This is the perfection of life. So we should know that the perfection of life lies not in achieving all kinds of material benedictions, or not in going to Krishna for material comforts, but actually to become pure devotees of the Lord. This is the highest. There is nothing higher in life than becoming a pure devotee of God. And one who has become a pure devotee, nothing more is left for him to achieve in life. But does it mean he stops his activity at that time? He goes on. He just goes on and on and on and on eternally. In fact, it is when he becomes a pure devotee that his real business begins. Then he goes on serving, and the discharge of devotional service becomes actually sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. The real bliss of bhakti is experienced only beyond this stage. What we are now experiencing in our neophyte condition is only sometimes a small taste. Krishna sometimes gives us a very small taste of that high bliss, that ecstasy. Sometimes. Just to keep us here. Just to keep us at His lotus feet somehow or the other. But we must be careful that we must continue. If we continue at the lotus feet of the Lord, serving Him, then one day we will be successful. We must have that faith. Just as when a person who has come in from the scorching sun, he comes under the shade of a tree, he gets immediate relief. Although the sun is there outside and he may still be perspiring, but immediately there is some relief. And eventually he will become completely rested, to be sure. If he goes out into the sun again, there will be trouble again. But if he simply remains where he is relieved. Similarly, having come to Krishna, the scorching heat of material distress in the outside world is very painful. So if now that you have come to the shelter of Lord of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, you should just stay here. Just stay on somehow or the other, in spite of so many difficulties that may come, in spite of so many troubles. Just continue to discharge devotional service. And already you will experience some relief. And if you don't go back into the sunshine, the scorching heat, then eventually, very shortly, we can all attain the perfection of life. Thank you very much. So we will have darshan now. and after the darshan. So are there any questions? At first, in a way that he wants to have some more money, or maybe he wants to have some a bigger house or a car in order to come to the temple. What are such material desires?
If something is going to help you to come to Krishna, if something is connected to Krishna, then in one sense it is not a material desire, because ultimately you want to progress in your Krishna consciousness. But on the other hand, there is also a danger that because of these acquired possessions, we may get entangled and we may get attached to them, and we may also begin to use them for things other than Krishna consciousness. So whatever is needful, whatever is necessary for improving our spiritual life, we should do whatever practical action is necessary, and whatever practical day-to-day adjustments you need to make in your material life, you can make. But with the ultimate goal of ensuring that it helps you to remember Krishna more and to become a better devotee. If you do that, then such plans and such desires are legitimate. But we must not be attached to such plans. It doesn't mean that if I don't get a car to come to the temple, then I will reduce my Krishna consciousness. No, that must go on. What is the test that whether this is really material or not? That if Krishna doesn't give it to me, I am still continuing Krishna consciousness with the same enthusiasm. That is the test. Or if you have something and Krishna takes it away from you, the proof that you are detached is that you are still continuing in your Krishna consciousness with the same enthusiasm, perhaps more. So we should go about these things in a detached way, as far as our material things are concerned. Then it can be said to be done in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it can be just a disguised material desire. Is there any other question?
A word has come, sudurlabha. Is there any difference between durlabh or sudurlabh? Is it only emphasis?
Emphasis. Durlabha means rare. Sudurlabha means very rare. So rare to find.
Sin is not obeying the laws of God. The laws of God are given in the scriptures. Now, when we come to hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, then we are told about the four regulative principles, and we are taught that we must not eat meat. That is, meat eating is a sin. But then the Quran and such other scriptures are also the words of God. Now, in such other scriptures, there is no such injunction, and people who follow the different faiths, they feel they commit no sin when they have meat or some other thing. So there is a kind of a contradiction, and especially in a place like Bombay or any other place for that matter, where people live in a cosmopolitan environment, these kind of clashes of ideas do take place. Then how is the dispute to be resolved, or what is the right way out?
Actually, anyone with some clear intelligence will easily understand that killing of animals is a very cruel activity. What to speak of talking of elevated subject matters of God and scriptures, why should you cause, which God or which religion will want us to cause unnecessary pain to others? Civilized life means to cause minimum pain to others for your survival. In the very act of surviving, we are definitely going to cause pain to others. No doubt about it. That is the way the material world is designed. Try hard as you might, you are not going to be able to not cause pain to others. Even unknowingly, you will step on an ant. You are breathing so many germs and killing them. You have to eat plants, even if you are a vegetarian. The principle is minimum possible violence for your own survival. Minimum to the max, minimum violence. So why should you cause pain and cruelty to others unnecessarily? This is the first principle. And when we get more advanced, we can understand things like law of karma, action, reaction, of how much when we act on others, it will come back to us. So first of all, we can understand it from a philosophical point of view, of why we are saying what we are saying, why these four are considered to be sinful activities from the spiritual point of view. Now, the scriptures are given for all kinds of people, in all lands, in all times, in all circumstances. Therefore, we have variety of scriptures. As we were discussing, when we had two lectures on Shastra, scriptures, maybe a month back or so. So we were discussing at that time how scripture is one originally,
But it is subdivided into various sections and it appears to be separate. Shrutayo vibhinna. It appears to be subdivided into so many different sections that are apparently contradictory. Why so? Because people's mentalities are conflicting. There are some people who are very sinful, some people who are not so sinful, some people who are a little pious, and some people who are beyond piety and impiety, they want only pure devotion. So for every class of people, Krishna is giving us a certain kind of scripture. And not only for mentality, but also for time and place and circumstance. So when the Quran and Bible were given, the circumstances were different. They were in the desert. And they were in certain social economic situations. And the will of God at that time was at least to get them to stop certain sinful activity. There are so many severe injunctions in the Quran. If you read, you will be shocked as to what was the need for Prophet Muhammad to say so many things like this. Obviously, they were doing all those activities at that time. Therefore, Prophet Muhammad had to say, don't do these things. Otherwise, what is the need for him to say it? In other words, he was talking to people of that class at that time. They were savages in the desert at that time. There are many who consider them savages even now in the Arabian countries. But at that time, they were absolute savages. So for such people, you cannot talk about high philosophy. You cannot talk about Upanishads and Bhagavatam philosophy. You have to give them what they can understand. So we can understand in the same way, just like a PhD mathematics teacher, when he's teaching the second standard, he teaches at a certain level. When he teaches 10th standard, he teaches a certain level. When he's teaching BSc at a certain level. And when he's guiding some PhD research scholars in mathematics, he will teach at another level. Same mathematics, the same truth, 2 plus 2 equal to 4, but he will teach in different ways according to the level or the capacity of the people to understand. Similarly, the various scriptures are meant for various mentalities of people in different times, in different circumstances, situations. And so there appears to be a contradiction. So we can see which is the highest. What is the highest? If I am willing to be satisfied with the lower grade, then all right. But that will not help me to achieve the highest perfection of life in and of itself. It will help me to become slightly elevated in consciousness. But even then, even if they are eating meat according to the particular... Actually, even in the Quran, it is very clear that even in the when you eat meat, the name of Allah has to be inscribed on it. So in other words, they are also talking about the process of offering, of prasad. Even in the Bible, it is said, thou shalt not kill. But they extend it to say, thou shalt not kill man. They say, you can kill animals. But Christ never said that you can kill animals. He said, thou shalt not kill. So therefore, because they are not following the injunctions of their own scriptures, therefore there is problem. At least if they start following their own injunctions properly, then at least they will get some gradual advancement, and in a future life they will be able to understand Bhagavad philosophy. The Bhagavad philosophy is meant for the Paramahansas and for those who are aspiring to be Paramahansas. It is meant for everyone. At the same time, it is not meant for everyone. It is meant for everyone in the sense that anyone can come to it. No restrictions of caste, creed, nationality, etc. At the same time, everyone cannot come to it because they are conditioned by certain mentalities and they will not come to this. If it, for example, when Prabhupada went to the West, one of his godbrothers went to the West and one great lord, British lord, some esquire so and so, he asked him, what is your Sanatana Dharma? What can you do to make me a Brahmin? Can I become a Brahmin? So he said, yes. So what do I have to do? So he said, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. It's impossible. Not possible. So such people, how can they come to understand Bhagavatam? Not possible. So for each class of people, there is another particular kind of scripture. That is the reason why there appears to be so many contradictions. But actually it is not. Therefore we should try to get as many people as possible to try to understand this Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad philosophy. Then they can go to the highest state. One last question, if there is anyone.